we were talking about safety features. He said he had to wear hard hats.
Mm-hmm. And shoes with the toes in, steel toes, reinforced, and heels, of course. Heavy shoes. Where I worked, because if anything fell on your feet, it'd smash them.
What about signs around, or like we've heard of some machines being painted, parts of machines being painted with warning signs and that kind of thing. I'm wondering if you ever saw any of that.
Not during the war, but when I was there second time, I went to work late. There was warning and things around the machines, because I learned to operate those big machines then, which I didn't do during the war.
With the scaffolding, did you feel secure on the scaffolding?
Eventually. The first few days I was there, they didn't have it quite completed, and there was about this much space between the wing and the floor. But eventually they had they hinged a wide board onto that. They had to have that much space to move the wing.
About a foot? Yeah.
No, I said more, 18 inches. Then they did have this board, a safety board, that was hinged on, and when they moved it, they just put that up. But before that was put on, that was when they had to crawl down, and that plane was over so far, and you could look down. It scared me nearly to death with that. And one night, I was dreaming. I was going down into that. And my husband woke me up. He says, "What are you doing?" I got out of bed, come around to the foot of the bed, which was about so high, and I was trying to climb up on the bed, dreaming I was climbing down in that wing. I had a ringing nightmare about it. So you see how it impressed me. Well, they finally got those safety boards up there. So, and they came, when they were down, they came within about that far of the plane, so it wasn't any problem. But until they did that, and you look way down there, it's just about 30 feet down. And it was scary when you're afraid of heights.
Which level did you work on?
Mostly on the second level, but we did have to work on the third every once in a while, and it was from up there that it looked so far down. But even on the second level, it looked pretty far down. But I had to work on the second level most of the time. And until they got those safety boards up, I suppose the men hadn't thought anything about it, but you could have fallen down there. It was wide enough. You could have.
You said you used to get blisters on your arms.
Yeah.
How exactly, where did they come from exactly?
From the hot drillings. When you're drilling up above your head with that big drill, even though you've gone through with a smaller drill, a 30, which is about the size of a lead and a lead pencil, to a 10, which would be about the size of my little finger, to a quarter inch, to a half inch, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Those drillings are hot when they come down, when you're drilling, and they fall. You can kind of see where the spots are,
mm-hmm.
the white spots. Still, most of them are gone, but they're still there. Your arm like that, you know, and they come right down on your arm. So, of course, you're supposed to have sleeves on, but it would be so hot in the summertime that it would roll my sleeves up, and that's when my arms would be all blistered.
Did you ever go to the dispensary for that?
I don't remember they did. I worked for a lot of things, but not that. I know that I went to a dentist once. No, this wasn't at the plant. And he saw my arms. He says, "What on earth ever happened to your arms?" And I explained, "Oh, you poor dear." I really thought that poor little old woman out there getting her arms all blistered up. But it was my fault it was that way, because I was supposed to have my sleeves down.
Were you ever injured in any other way?
Oh, yes. I drill. Not during the war. This was later. After I went the second time.
So you just had the blisters the first time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about people around you? Immediate people?
Well, not in my own group, but there was one time when they started to move the line in position north of me. One woman was looking down, and they said she got her head in and got it crushed. We never saw her. But there was quite a commotion around there, and they took someone out. But she was looking down and got too close to it. Whether how badly she's injured, we never knew. But that's the only thing that right near to me that I know that happened. They were pretty strict about their safety rules.
You said you used the dispensary for other things. What
oh, like sprained wrists. And a lot of times you get drillings in your eyes. Yet then you have to go down to the dispensary and have them taken out. And one time I got a piece of wood down in her finger, down like this. And I had to go in the, I don't know which finger it was now. I had to go to the main dispensary, and he froze it and slipped the finger open and took it out of a big long splinter that was clear inside. It got from, oh, it was some of those jigs that I was working on. And took it out, but other than that, I can't remember anything that happened that time during the war.
Did you wear safety glasses when you were drilling?
Oh, yes, we had to. Supposed to wear them all the time. Yeah, we had to wear safety glasses. This would probably look like something from Mars with our heads tied up and our hard hats on and our safety glasses.
Do you remember other kinds of services that the plant provided besides the dispensary?
Well, they had cafeteria up near the gate. I didn't go there very often, though, because we didn't have time. From what little time we had to eat, we usually got our own lunch. And they had a store, too, that was supposed to sell things cheaper. You couldn't get out, you know, to shop. They had all kinds of things in that.
Did you ever use it?
Yeah. And one time I bought my husband little pocket radios when they first came in. It was larger than they are now quite a bit. I remember it was $40. It was a big price at that time. And, oh yes, I picked up lots of other things different times. We'd stop in, maybe going home or coming in, something like that, if it was open.
Mm-hmm. But not as a regular
shopping? No, no. There's a place you could go to pay your bills, or utility bills, in one of the buildings. But a lot of people, I've done it. And there's a place to get money orders. Because people couldn't go, you know, on their time of working, at lunchtime they could go and get that. If you did, like going to the store, why, we took it on, we didn't eat lunch, or we'd maybe eat it as we worked ahead of time, and it took a whole half hour to go down there and back. Because from where I worked, it was, it'd be several blocks, you know, ordinary. It'd be quite a bit farther than from here to the street.
What about counselors or recreation programs, that kind of thing?
I guess they might have had them for maybe softball and things like that, but I didn't have any energy for that then. The only thing I remember is donating blood, which wasn't recreation.
Do you remember people talking about using the counselors for anything?
No. Mm-mm. Not during the war.
You said that there was a newspaper that came out every week.
Oh, the little, yeah, there was a newspaper. There was just little items about the plant. And those cartoons, and I just can't remember what was in it. Now it's maybe about certain departments putting out so much work or something like that. Just little things like that, but I don't remember much about it. I do remember those cartoons, how funny they were. And later he had them made up into a book, and I do have those books around someplace. The first book was funnier than the second book. He had two books, and they sold them at the plant. Mm-hmm. I think $1 a piece, something like that. But, no, I don't remember much about that. Wish I did. Maybe somebody had something for sale or something like that would be put in there, you know.
Was this a plant newspaper or what?
Yeah, uh-huh. Just a plant newspaper.
Did you ever see the magazine that Douglas put out that covered all the plants?
Mm-mm.
All the Douglas plants?
No, I never saw that. I still get their magazine about their, how they are financially and everything like that, you know, about, well, they used to send it to me about once a year, and then I finally got, if I wanted it, to send a dollar. I never sent a dollar. I didn't want it that bad.
I'm going to talk about minority workers again, and to see if you are aware of like more minority workers being placed in certain parts of the plant, like maybe in certain areas rather than scattered throughout. I know you said there was one black woman on your crew, but would you say that around you that they were just in all the different departments, or
they were in all the different departments. And there was one Spanish girl, Mexican girl, worked with us that I liked very much. She was young. She lived in Pico, Rivera. Her husband was in the service. And while he was gone, she bought a little house with her money that close to her folks. I don't imagine it was very much, because it was right down the Mexican section. And she used to have to walk a mile to get to the bus to come to work every morning. But I think they were just scattered throughout the plant.
Did people around you mind working with them?
Didn't seem to. Mm-mm.
What about the women? Towards the end, when there were so many, they were everywhere. But when you first went in, were you also placed everywhere, or were there some areas that had higher concentration of women workers?
I think they were just kind of scattered around, because I'd see the different ones in different departments, you know, that had been up there. But I think they were just scattered around as they were needed. I know some of them were moved around. Maybe they didn't like the job they had and wanted to try something else. Or maybe they didn't do well in that position. But I had kept the same job that they put me on all the way through the war. So I didn't get out to see an awful lot that was going on other places.
Mm-hmm. Were you aware of union activities?
Yes, very much. We didn't have a union the first one in. And the two fractions were sort of warring against each other, AFL and CIO. And finally they joined forces. I belong to the union.
When it came in,
I joined.
What kinds of activities were going on when you went in 42? What kinds of activities were you aware of? And what kind? Were you aware of the union?
I wasn't aware of it at all, of the union then. In fact, my husband was very much against the union, given all I'd heard. But before it was over, he was right for it, because it did so much for us women. It brought us up to the same wage as the man. But they were, a couple of years after I went to work, getting into the plant. There wasn't any union there at all to start in with. And then you had your choice of one or the other. And then the union finally joined forces. So that, but the two of them together, auto workers and AFL and the CIO, is together. That's how I have my insurance for Kaiser. I got it through them at that time. I still have it. And I intend to keep it.
When they started fighting for union recognition, is that when you became aware of it, or after the union was accepted in the plan?
Well, yeah, we knew they were. We had to vote on it, whether they'd let them in or not. But most of the activity like that was after 1950.
Okay. You don't remember stuff?
It wasn't an awful lot. I can't remember of any fighting or anything. They were just holding elections. Certain amount was certain factions wanted them in and certain factions didn't. And they had the employees vote on it. And I suppose we voted to let them in because they got in. To me, it didn't mean much at the time.
This is during the war.
Just during the war, that's what I'm talking about. But you know, later when they went out on strike in 1952, I was working there then. And the union's what held us out on strike, and it got us a lot of good deals for the women that they didn't have before.
You said your husband was real against the union. Did you have any ideas or thoughts about the union when it first came in, when you first started hearing about it?
No, because I didn't know anything about it. I knew that my husband was against the union because things he'd heard, he had to join a union though when he went in the shipyards. Had to be a union member before he could get a job, he had to join it. But he wasn't very happy about it, but he did because he needed a job. But at that time, Douglas didn't have any union. And I think that the company itself was trying to keep the union out. And then, when it did come in, you weren't compelled to join it. You could join if you wanted to. It wasn't a closed, what do you call it?
Closed shop.
No, it wasn't a closed shop.
Why did you decide to join?
Because I thought that they were doing more for the women, and I'd get more out of it. And everybody else was joining in the crew. I guess that was the reason.
Did you talk about it in the crew?
Well, I suppose we did. I don't remember a lot about it, though. I know the company gave us about 10, 15 minutes off, something like that, to vote, to go down to vote, where they had a polling place set up, one place in the building. But I don't remember much about that. Well, evidently it wasn't a big issue.
Did you ever go to meetings? Or get involved in any
Yeah, they used to hold meetings lunchtime, sometimes out between the buildings, and we'd take our lunch out there and listen to them. They did that more though after in the 50s than they did during the war. And I get the two confused because there's several years I didn't work, you know, when I went back.
Do you remember how you joined, what the process was for you to join the union?
I just think they took the dues out of the check. I don't remember. I think when we got our check, the dues were taken out of them.
Was there a special place that you went to sign up?
No. I think they just sent a paper around and we signed it. As I remember. I'm not hazy about that. I just don't remember much about it. It didn't mean much to me at the time.
You talked about where you lived. I'd like to talk about your family life a little bit now. And you said that two of your daughters and their children lived with you
mm-hmm.
and your husband in Santa Ana. First of all, how did you get to work? You said your husband brought you to work?
That was when I went to get a job. Oh. No, there was a man, well, it wasn't like carpool, but he had an old car, and he got riders. I think it was four women and himself. And he came around, picked us up in the morning, brought us home, a whole dollar and a half a week. He could get gas stamps that way. Gas was rationed. And he went every day. He'd go, I think it was a Studebaker. That was a big old car, anyhow. And he picked us up, picked me up at 6 o'clock every morning. And got home between 5 and 5:30 in the evening. And he went around. Some of them were just on the street east of the Main Street, down toward the junior high, east down in there. It was all from that section of town. just, you know, they kind of, at the plant, they had, you know, people getting rides, and from a certain section they'd pick him up. He didn't have to drive all over town, just a certain section.
He worked there too?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, there were the Douglas buses that ran, and later when he quit driving, for some reason, I've forgotten what, I had to take the bus, and it went down Flower Street, which was two blocks over from Parton. And I had to walk right up to the corner and over two blocks to catch the bus at 6 o'clock in the morning. And that bus was like the one I lived in Whittier and I went to work next time. It was so much a week, whether you went one day or 5 days. I don't remember just what we paid during the war. But it, and the driver worked there, you know. He drove the bus there and parked it and worked there and he drove it back. And he had his route to go on. I think the last year I worked, I rode the bus.
So both your daughters lived at home. Did they take care of all the cooking and cleaning mm-hmm. and shopping and all those kinds
Not
of
the
things?
Shopping. But they had their babies there, you know. And they took care of the house and did the laundry. I did my own ironing. Those were daily red iron things. And part of the cooking they did. Good part of it. We bought the groceries every Friday night, and we always left the $10 or $15 in the cupboard if they had to have milk or anything. A little corner store at the corner, I think, in McFarland and Parton, little country store, and I mean a mom and pop store. They'd go down to, and because they were there with their babies, and we had food stamps. Do you remember when Truman's Grocery was in Santa Ana? It was on Broadway, about two streets up from Fifth Street, in that corner, the intersection. Furniture store over there. There's another grocery store here. Anyhow, we traded Truman's for years, and he knew us, knew my husband. And of course, the babies had to have baby food, and that time it was sort of rationed and put on the shelves. And we did our shopping, a good part in the back room, by the carton for the babies, for the two babies there. And our meat stamps, we knew the butcher, and we just gave him all our meat stamps. And a lot of times, we had more stamps than we got meat, and a lot of times we had more meat than we had stamps. He just evened it up. We just picked out what meat we wanted for the week, and gave him all our stamps, and that was it. And we never had any trouble getting meat and groceries, anything like that. If they had anything special that was a treat in those days, you know, if they didn't put out, he'd say, we've got some of this you want. Then, yeah, I'll take that. That's the way we did our shopping. Of course, during war work, he knew that we couldn't get down during the daytime to buy the groceries. But, you know, at that time, there was several women that lived up on Victoria Drive, that rest of part of Santa Ana, that used to get together and go out of Santa Ana, out toward Midway City, and out that way and watch for the meat trucks to come in and follow them into stores so they could get some meat. And they'd get in there first and get what meat they wanted. Those things happen.
I'm sure.
But we didn't suffer anything like that with the, of course we didn't, we only had a few gas stamps because we neither one of us drove to work. So we picked up, my husband, somebody picked him up all the time. And we had to save for about 2 weeks to have enough gas to come up to Pomona to visit my husband's brother on Sunday. It would take about 2 weeks gas stamps to get up here and back. And couldn't buy new tires, they were all retreads. And we had an old car that ordinarily, we would have traded it in. It was a 39 Hupmobile, and it was an orphan baby. They only made a few of them, and parts of it. An old man down on, he lived east of the Main Street, and he used to make the parts for that car. Of course, he charged us plenty. If anything went wrong with it, he made the part and kept it going for us. And we kept that old car until 1949. It was 39, just 10, 12 years old before we got rid of it.
Yeah, you said earlier your husband liked to get new cars every
year. Yeah, he did. He'd turn them in every second year. Once in a while, he'd go to the third year, but usually every other year. And he did after that, too. But that's the only time we ever saved any money is when we kept that old car. Always had a car payment. And then we had, remember, it was then first Nashes that came in looked like bathtub, and well, that's what we got. And we could fill up that tank, 20-gallon tank, gasoline, and go clear to San Francisco on it. We got 26 miles a gallon of that. I've never been able to do it since on any car. And the other old car was getting about 10. We felt like we were traveling for free.
What kinds of things would you do? You had, because your husband often worked 7 days a week. You worked 6 days a week. On Sundays, that was your only free day.
Yeah.
How would you spend that day?
Well, usually catching up on little things I wanted to do. Once in a while, if he wasn't, didn't have to work, why, we'd have company, but not very often. Getting my ironing done, getting ready to go back to work again. That's about all you had time to do.
Did you get to
playing with the little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We were babysitters at night. They'd put them to bed. And one of the girls, Peggy, her husband, had a car, and he was old. She had it, and the two girls would go to the show or something, and I'd put the babies to bed, and they weren't in any trouble. Once in a while, I'd have to go in to them, but usually they were sound asleep, but we were there, you know. So they got out with a little bit of social life that way, not much.
Did you feel any connection between what you were doing and the war itself at Douglas? I mean, both your son-in-laws were...
Oh, I had three son-in-laws, all three of them, in different branches of the service. No, when I'd come home from work, I'd look at those two girls to see what their faces were, if they'd had a telegram that day. That is what our dread was, that we would regret to inform you. And I'd look at them to see how this... It was all right, it was okay, I didn't say anything. But I'd look at them to see if something had happened while I was gone, because they were expecting a telegram most of the time, because Ben was a flyer stationed in Corsica, and Bob was an ordinary little land soldier under Mark Clark, came all up Italy, picked his buddy up in pieces, and, you know, it affected him till he had a hard time getting over it after he got home. Finally ended in divorce. And Don, Arlene's husband, went right in. He's in the Navy. He was a sonar. He took charge whenever there was anything happened at night on a ship. He went back east. He went in as a lieutenant and took training back there. He said, well, he was a graduate of Cal. Said it wasn't what you knew, it's who you knew. He pulled strings to get that job. And so there's one in each branch of the service, except Marines. You're not even Marine.
Did you ever get to see the plane finished?
Oh, yeah.
When you were working?
Oh, yeah. I remember when the 1,000th plane went through. I wasn't there that day. I think that's when I had to take off when... That little guy was born right there. Anyhow, I was off a week, and it went through. Everybody autographed it. And then they took it out and scrubbed it off. No, I've seen them, the planes. What the ones they were concentrating on in our building was the big B-17. But later, when I went to work in the 50s, we saw a lot of those planes, and they and take off for the first time and hold your breath to be sure they got up in the air, you know, and they made the round trip back or go out to Air Force Base out there in the desert and back, you know. But what kind of thrill to see them get up and you know you helped make them.
Mm-hmm. Were there ever, are people coming through the plant that, I've heard stories of, like, former pilots or famous people or whatever that came through the plant to kind of build your morale and say, I flew your plane. And
well, they did. We just saw them going through, mostly. They'd be, sometimes they'd be pilots, sometimes they would be, I remember one time the whole Japanese delegation went through. And they were just out conducting them on a tour. But there's more of that happened in later years than there was during the war. I don't remember too much except sometimes it would be more, it would be more like people, Americans, businessmen, and maybe executives of the plant going through than